Hi, my name is Daryl, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello,
How's that volume? Is that good? Can you hear me? Okay.
Daryl.
I'm terribly nervous. I hate speaking. I do. So,
Yeah.
but I love Alcoholics Anonymous. So hopefully God will take over here soon. I'm one of these guys who grown up. I was the kid who would not do projects in school so that I didn't have to present it in front of the class. I would just go into terrible panic attacks if I had to stand up in front of a room of people. And that carried it well into my 20s. And so it's been amazing how that's changed. Just here in Alcoholics Anonymous and then out in the world too. But it's still with me, every time this starts. I have so much that I want to say to my people, to my drunks, to the fellowship that I love, that saved my life, that's transformed the relationships in my life, that's given me a new freedom, a new hope, new experiences. There's so much I always want to say, and this amazing thing happens where as soon as I get here, I suddenly can't remember any of those experiences. And my mind just goes blank. And I'm like, dang. And the truth is, really what's happening is I'm afraid. I'm afraid of what you're going to think of me. It's what it always boils down to for me. And I didn't know that about myself before coming here and giving myself to these steps of this way of life, to getting down to causes and conditions in the inventory process. I didn't know these things about myself. That fear drove me and propelled me through life, that my entire world was just shot through with it, as it describes it. And it just drove all of my actions. And I don't suffer from that as much today. I experienced the fear, but I have something new in my life. I have a God. I have a relationship with that God. That's a direct result of me coming to Alcoholics Anonymous over and over and over again, desperate, drinking, coming here drunk, being a message being carried to me. I don't know how many times, 1,000 times over the years. And to finally, and I don't know how this happened. I don't understand the power of this God. Not really. I think I do sometimes, but I don't. And something happened to where I was willing to do something different. To be honest, that was the different thing to do. No matter how bad that was going to make me look, that's terribly difficult to do, and I suffered for a long time because I was not willing to do that. But I have a relationship with that God today as a result of going through these steps with another drunk, with a sponsor, as I call him today. And I have found that I have not been able to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous alone successfully. I've tried to do it alone. I've tried to think about it and to understand it. But this is an experiential program. It's a textbook, sure, and we can understand it. And I love doing that. I love diving into step book book studies and just nerding out on it. That's just how my mind works. But at the end of the day, it's about having an experience. I have to have my own experience with these steps, and a sponsor guides me through that. And even though I can understand the words in the book, I can't seem to actually create it on my own, put that recipe together. I couldn't do it. And that doesn't really make sense to me. I'm a pretty smart guy. I think I'm the smartest guy I know. But I desperately need that. I'm grateful for that relationship today. I love that man. And I can tell him anything without fear. There will be discomfort, but I know I can trust him because I know that it's not just me and him. It's not human power. It's God. he continually turns me around towards that God, towards that relationship. And that's what this program does. And I'm just starting to wake up, you know, and see this God working in my life, and getting to practice this way of life, that it really is truly a way of life, to continually return to God. That that's what I'm doing here. You know, I just, I had so many false ideas, or I don't know. I had so many ideas that I just came up with on my own of what this God stuff was supposed to look like. And it just, it's been completely off. I feel like I'm getting into step two already. I haven't talked about step one. Okay. I have a sobriety date. I started talking about God because I hope that if I say anything here tonight, it's that. That's the purpose here. That's what we're doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. So if I'm not talking about God, I don't know what I'm talking about. And I know that I'm charged with coming here to talk about what I used to be like, what happened and what I'm like now. And I hope I do that. The reality is I'm not practiced at this, so I don't have like a button down drunken log. It's a mess. But I do have a sobriety. It's April the 29th of 23. So a little less than 2 years. That's not my first sobriety date. I've had a lot, more than I can count. I've had 3 years sober twice and drank again. I've been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous since I was 18 years old, and I'm 39 today. So there's a lot that comes with that. That's my experience, and that's fantastic, because there's so many drunks out there that are stuck in that revolving door. In and out, in and out. I see them all the time. And those are the guys that I get to connect with. And that's a beautiful thing. That's part of the awakening, I think, for me today. That all of my experience drinking in and out of AA, all the suffering, all the self-obsession, all the mistakes, all the things, all the self-loathing, and all of the mess that I created, it's all used for good now. We don't want to sweep that away. I didn't burn my four step. I hear people do that. If you do that, it's okay. But I don't do that. I need to know that stuff, because that's the stuff that's going to be helpful to another alcoholic, because nobody could reach me like another alcoholic could. The book talks about, in the doctor's opinion, frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. And I always bring that, I read that section a lot up when I go to the detox center. I've been doing that for a year now. I go every month, and that's an amazing experience. I'm so grateful I get to do that today. But we talk about that a lot, and it's powerful for me. It's absolutely stunning. I can recall being, when I was 18 or 19 years old, I have this vivid memory of being in my grandfather's house, which is where I lived during high school, because the family was a bit of a mess, right? So I'm living in grandma and grandpa's house, and I got kicked out when I graduated high school, and I'm off ripping and roaring, and then the family doesn't hear from me for a year. You know, that's what, I'm just living for the party. I'm looking for the next good time. That's all I can see. And I have this vivid memory of being sober in my grandfather's house in the back room with all the lights off, and I'm pulling nails up out of the board, because that house, it was in Pocosin. It's right on the water, and it floods, you know, three times a year. And my grandfather's continually redoing the floor, right? So I'm pulling up nails, and because it's happened again. And my grandfather doesn't speak very a lot. He's a man of few words, right? And I'm back there alone in the dark, and grandpa's walking by to get something out of the back room, And he stops and he like turns around, like unprompted. You know, I didn't say anything to him. And he just turns around and he just goes, "Son, just have a few drinks, get high, and stop." And I'm minding my own business. I'm sober. I'm pulling up nails, you know? And I'm like, and but really, my honest reaction to that was I'm looking at him and I'm like, yeah, that's a great idea. That sounds fantastic. That makes complete sense in this moment. That would be wonderful. But I'm not capable of doing that. And I don't have the knowledge of what alcoholism is at that time. I don't know that I'm powerless over alcohol. You know, I don't know that what that looks like. I don't have the words to describe it, but I have the love of family members trying to help me. Grandpa saying it to me. I have the look of my mother. Yeah, I don't know if you know that look. That disappointment, the disgust, the disgrace of how her son shows up to her work. Just a complete mess. How embarrassing that is for her in front of her coworkers and her peers and her bosses. Showing up in the family like that. God knows what I was doing the night before. So they don't know how I'm going to show up or when. I'm completely self-centered. I can't think about these things, and I don't mean to be this way. You know, I don't want to hurt them. You know, I want to be a good son and a good brother. I want to show up to my sister's graduation and be present for her and remember that. I want to be a part of the family. And you know, a mother's love is powerful. Father's love is powerful. It wasn't powerful enough not to keep me sober, to make me want to be sober, yeah, to make me want to stop doing those things, but it wasn't enough. And then I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I hear a guy I've never met before in my entire life. I don't know anything about this guy. And he just starts talking about his drinking and starts talking about how it was like he was having an out-of-body experience, watching himself go into the 7-Eleven to buy another bottle, even though he said he didn't want to, as if he were watching himself do it from a bird's eye view. And I was like, my God, that happens to me. And I didn't know that. I didn't have that language. And that reaches me. And because I can see that he's felt what I felt, that he knows that there's, he starts to describe the real nature of my disease, of my malady, that no human power can relieve me of my alcoholism. So the human power is not enough. The mother's love is not enough. Sobriety is not enough. I don't know how many times I've gotten sober. I'm really good at it. I've gotten sober 1,000 times. You know, I've dried out at Tucker's Detox, spent 6 days at Tucker's Detox, spent 30 days in an inpatient rehab center, gaining all the knowledge I could possibly get about psychology, you know, and cognitive behavioral therapy. And please don't get me wrong, I'm not knocking psychologists. Physical sobriety and self-knowledge. That wasn't enough either. Like, damn. But these are the things I'm trying. So it seems too simple that this God idea is enough. That seems too simple for me. And I'm afraid of it. I'm terribly afraid of it. Cool. Well, and the hard truth at the time is that I also hate myself. I loathe the things that I've done and that I'm hiding. I'm living the double lives everywhere I go. And I really hated myself. I thought I was, in my mind, I was below, I was subhuman. Some of the things that I had done that took me a long time to get honest about. And if you have those things, and if you're not being honest about them and it's keeping you drinking, I pray that you find the courage to talk about it. Find another alcoholic that you can trust to say those things, because that's been the turning point for me this time. I've done the fourth and fifth steps where I left the thing off. I didn't stay sober. So, you know, I was lost in the powerlessness for a long time. Spent a lot of time searching for the human powers, the knowledge, the physical sobriety that's going to get things sorted out. It's going to get all the outside pieces put together in the correct way that I'm going to be okay first, you know, that, and I think about this line. It always comes back to me. It's in the fourth step. When it starts talking about resentments, it's really simple. It says, when we straighten out spiritually, we straighten out mentally and physically. And my whole life, my whole experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, I just do it backwards. I need to straighten out mentally so that I can feel better, so that I can be right. I need to straighten out physically. I got to lose some weight. I got to get a little more muscle. I got to get the honey around, you know. The job, yes. I need the money. That's going to, then I can get a better apartment. Then I'll be able to work out more. I'll feel better. I'll be praying more. You know, I've always had it backwards. And it says it right there. That's a conditional statement. When the spiritual is addressed, then straightened out mentally and physically, it's never the other way around. And I fall into that trap continually today. But I know it now, and I get to return. That's a beautiful thing. So I have to address the spiritual side first. And it took a long time for me to get there. My drinking scares people. I was going through, like, I was trying, and I don't think I'm that bad, like, really. And then I was like, I'm trying to, like, I have so many drunk stories, you know, and I'm like trying to, like, nail down a couple to, like, tell the group, you know. I'm like, what do I tell people? And, like, I was reading this list I had, and I was like, oh, tell that story. You know, I started off drinking alone, like, really. My first drink was when I was 3 years old. My mother told me that I used to be the gopher. Daryl, go get us another beer. And I go out to the garage and get another beer and bring it to him at 3 years old. And that was just what I did. It was cute, right? Look at little Daryl, he's getting us some beer. But then my mom told me that I started coming back with it open and I'd been sipping out of it. Ominous warning, which I failed to heed, you know. thank you for laughing. That's my joke. That's my AA joke. I'm so proud of that joke. You don't know how happy you made me by laughing at that a little bit. I told my girlfriend that joke the other night and she didn't laugh. And she's an AA. So I don't know. I wasn't a daily drinker at three, though, you know. I grew up in a military family, so I traveled all over. And I had, I think, a little different experiences around alcohol because I lived in England and Germany. I turned 13 years old in England, and it's very different drinking there. You're allowed to drink at the pub if you're with your parents. You know, your guardian, your parents are there to watch you. They're responsible for you. If they want to give you a beer, they give you a beer. When I was 13, I had a beer at the pub, you know. That's where we hung out every night. It was me, my dad, and my sister. He'd bring us to the pub. He'd have his beers, and I might get to sip on some, you know. And I'm shooting pool with grown men, you know. And this is, I loved it. I loved the atmosphere. I was just at home there, you know, just naturally. At 12 and 13 years old, it's fantastic. It's just in me, you know. I wasn't taught this, you know. My sister and brother did not have the same experiences as I did. They're not alcoholics. I don't know. So I forgot what I was talking about. Yeah. Yeah. So my drinking, I remember drinking in England when I was 13, setting out to get drunk. We would steal some wine from my buddy's mom because she always had a box of wine going. She was a riot, and box of cheap wine in the fridge, and I would just fill it up to the top like a big pint glass, and I would just chug it. I'm trying to get drunk, and I didn't get drunk, and I got mad. I don't know. That was a strange experience. And I had a lot of little experiences, getting to have a few beers with dinner, feeling like a grown up. I don't know. It took a little while, but when there was one time in high school when I was 14, I think, or 15, and I just had a couple of beers, and I'd had a couple of drinks before, and a couple, I think I had a couple of drunks too, but they weren't life changing. They weren't spiritual experiences, but then suddenly it happened, and I drank, I think it was four Budweisers, and I was just lit up, man. I was free, and I love drinking. And from that moment, I just love drinking. It just and I and so that's what I would set out to do. And at night, I would drink alone. I would go steal beers from my grandfather's fridge. And I'm just sitting alone in my room, and I get like three or four, and feel good, and it was great. I guess my peers weren't drinking alone at night on a Tuesday night in high school. But that didn't seem abnormal to me. That seemed like it was nice. It was lovely. I liked it. And I always wanted to drink. And I can really relate to the obsession of the supply of alcohol. There was going to be enough. And all of this developed a lot as my drinking progressed over the years. So it's not like my drinking started out scaring people. It didn't start that way. It definitely progressed. I remember a time going to New York City with my buddies to go party for my friend's birthday, and we just went for the weekend for 3 days, and we were going to go hard, and they were all hard drinkers, and they wanted a party. That was the goal, to just get drunk for 3 days. So there's these people around me that are drinking heavily. But I scared them. The first night we got in there, and I drove us in, and I had some extracurriculars help me drive us there because I'd already been drinking for 2 days. So I needed to make sure and stay awake. We arrive into New York City, midnight, go close down a bar till like 4 in the morning. And get like 3 hours of sleep, and we wake up and go get a bagel and walk over to a friend's apartment, and everybody's sitting, we're all sitting around rehydrating is what they were doing. And I didn't realize that. I was hurt. I mean, I was already on day three, and so I was drinking vodka just straight up in a glass, and I thought all of them were too. I thought that's what we were doing. And I'm sitting there just just drinking, just trying to catch a buzz to, get drunk again because I'm so hungover. And my buddy looks over at me and he says, "Attaboy, Daryl, rehydrate." And I just looked at him and said, "This is vodka." And everybody just looked at me like, "What are you doing?" So they didn't drink like me. Not really. I had to keep going. So there's just something in me. When I start, I'm gonna keep going. I don't actually have control over what's gonna happen. And for large chunks of my drinking, all I did want to happen was to keep drinking, so it served me. I remember another time, years later, with a completely different set of friends, much older people with families. You know, they were all 15 years older than me, and we're at a beach house down in Rodanthe, and we're partying hard, and they're trying to let loose, and we're up till 2-3 in the morning, and this was the period where I'm drinking into a blackout every night. And my move was I'd have my bottle and I'd have my glass and I would drink cheap scotch, Clan MacGregor. And I would fall asleep with the bottle in my hand and the drink on my belly. I had a big beer belly, you know, I'm beet red. I weighed 240 pounds, you know, and I would pass out with the glass in my hand, and my buddy would always try to take it away from me, and I'd wake up and I start fighting them, like to not take it. And this would just go on and on. Like, he would try to take it from me several times until eventually he wins and I just pass out. And so I woke up this happened. And then I woke up the next morning with all the good people, you know, it's like 9 a.m. And they're like, what shall we have for breakfast? We're a little hungover. You know, we were really letting loose last night. And I don't remember doing this. I woke up and went to the freezer where my buddy had put my bottle, grabbed the bottle and started drinking the bottle up in front of everyone in the kitchen. And apparently really scared them. And they were concerned about me. This is normal for me. At that stage in my drinking, this is what my drinking looked like. You know, so there's no doubt in my mind that that I have this thing. It's a pretty simple description of what happens to me physically once the alcohol gets in. I have little to no control over what's going to happen. I think I might know what's going to happen. I have intentions on how the evening's going to go. I'm just going to the bar to have a couple beers and watch the game. I worked hard today. I deserve it. And then I'll be relaxed and I'll go home and cook dinner and take care of the thing, clean the car. And I tell myself this, it's a great plan. It makes sense. Sounds fantastic. I want to do this. I go to the bar and I have a drink but there's a new guy now with a new deal. And I think that I'm making the decision to stay and drink. I don't think of it as I'm powerless, that the drink's now in control. I really don't know what's going to happen once I start. It's just that simple. And then I have the alcoholic insanity in my mind. So I have all of this experience of scaring people when I drink, of disturbing my family members, wearing them out. They're suffering from my alcoholism. They're hurting. My mother's terrified every night. My mom got to the point, she told me, she said, I was happy that I didn't hear from you. So I didn't know if you were alive, but at least I didn't get the call that you were dead. You weren't hitting me up for money because you got your car towed again, or you were in jail. You can't pay your rent. You got your electricity shut off again. But I have all of these experiences over the years of hurting people, of doing what I, of being out of control and the mess that causes. And I still pick up the first drink, and that's alcoholic insanity for me. I don't know. I guess there's some people out there when they have, they talk about the real alcoholic and the problem drinker in the book, right? Where there's some people who drink heavily, but with sufficient reason, they can stop or moderate. I'm presented with a lot of sufficient reasons and I stop, but I can't stay stopped. I always have to drink again. So what's happening there? I'm sober. I can't live sober. So that then tells me that my problem is not alcohol. It's just not the problem. If the problem's alcohol, stop drinking alcohol. No more problem. So that tells us the problem centered in the mind. That's where it's centered. And it is rooted in selfishness. Damn. You know, when I first hear that, I'm just like, what? Oh man, like so getting to step three and getting to that realization that that's my problem. There's actually today for me, there's a lot of freedom in that. That's a relief to me today. It wasn't when I first heard it. It means that the problem's within me. That's good news. Because if the problem's external, I'm screwed. Because I actually don't have power over what you are doing, what the world's doing, what society is doing. I only have power over my next action. Really, that's about the only thing I have power over. And I don't have power over my thoughts either. So that's really good news for me today. And it talks about that. It says we must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. That's what's going to kill me, not drugs and alcohol. And then it says that God can, that is possible with God. And that creates a problem for me, right? So, like, even accepting that that's my problem is a big hurdle to get through that took a lot of drinking and a lot of coming to AA and fighting what you're saying, even though I'm relating to what you're saying. And I'm stuck in that for a long time. And if you're in that place right now, you're not alone. And I was there for a long time. But I had to start getting honest with someone. I had to start talking about it. I just sat in a chair and kept quiet. And I was just dissecting everything in my mind. And that's where I lived in my head, Daryl's little worlds. I was never like out into actual reality. So I had to start talking to you guys and start telling the truth about what I'm thinking about these things to start to have an experience with this, with these steps. So I had a couple of experiences with some churches when I was a kid. Nothing like, really to write home about it. They were negative. And so I just judged everyone in a religion as bad. And so I had very little experience and I had a lot of ignorance. That's what I came here with. I had a lot of ideas about God, and I had a lot of judgments about you and what people were doing in the name of God. And I had a lot of ego that I can see things clearly and they just can't. They just must be dumb. I had nothing but ego and arrogance and very little actual experience with a God when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't know that. So I had nothing but fear. And this idea of turning my will and my life over to the care of God, I don't even know what that means. What are you even talking about? I don't know what that looks like. And that next paragraph, it talks about how we had to quit playing God, that it didn't work. Well, how am I playing God? So that's what I start to wake up to today now is how am I playing God in life? And trying to control and manipulate everything around me. What are the expectations I have of how things should work out, of what I should get, of what I want my life to look like? And I just was, and I'll come to anything with some type of expectation naturally, and I just have that. So I have to quit playing God. When I'm turning my will and my life over to this idea of something more powerful than me, it's my thoughts and my actions. So I say I can't control my thoughts. Great, they're still coming. It's better today. My God. Is it better today? But absolute insane for a long time. And it really was kind of like 1 hour at a time, for days and weeks and months. It didn't just happen. And I don't know. I had these like ideas of what God is, of what spirituality is, of what a spiritual awakening is, what a spiritual experience is, all these words that we were throwing around in meetings. I didn't know I had like ideas on what that's supposed to look like. And I think that something is just going to come down and then just be like, and like you're just suddenly a different person. And now you're spiritual, and now you're not going to have those thoughts anymore. And that I'm just going to be like a little monk, running around Richmond, just never disturbed. I have that experience of being 3 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous with a home group and a sponsor and a sponsee and a commitment and not living in 10 and 11, not really. I lost my train of thought. Running out of time, huh? I'm getting tired. So I forgot what I was talking about. What was I talking about? Oh, my ideas on what a spiritual experience is supposed to look like, what God's supposed to look like, what all this is supposed to look like. You can't trick me with these Christian prayers. I know what the Lord's Prayer is. And a lot of meetings are saying paranoid. It freaked me out. But the reality is, I didn't actually have any personal experience with a God, and that was terrifying. So it's a leap of faith, actually, at that point, because that's a tough place to be, not having much experience with it, just having a lot of fear, but knowing I'm screwed because I'm starting to understand that I'm an alcoholic. I can't imagine life with or without the drink anymore. When I'm sober by day two, my chest is so tight and wound up that I feel like every cell in my body is going to rip apart and I'm going to explode for no reason other than I'm not drinking. Everything, all the pieces around me look the same. The details are the same as they were 2 days ago. The only thing that's changed is the drink. So that puts me in a tough place and I'm beaten down and I'm hopeless. And if you're new, and if you're there, I'm really glad you're here. I heard something that really stuck with me, that that's a really uncomfortable place to be, but it's a really wonderful place to be because that means something new can come in. And that's what it basically takes for me, right? Is I have to be just beaten down so badly that I can take a little act of faith that even though I'm afraid of the God thing, that maybe I'll just try. And it took a couple of attempts. I did a couple of inventories and didn't get honest. And it talks about in the fifth step, getting honest with God and another human being and ourselves. And there was something I couldn't be honest with myself about. And it took a long time. I'm grateful that it happened today. But, the I it, what was different though? This third time around, it's the same suffering. I don't understand it. I don't know. So that's a good place to be, I think, so that something new can come in. But it's a small window of opportunity for me in order to get honest. And that's what I did. And I jumped in. And ever since then, there I've started to have experiences personally with my God in my relationships, because I start bringing him into all my relationships. And I have my sponsor to go through this with, to walk with. And I had a lot of really wonderful amend stories that just lit me up. And I don't have time to talk about them, I'm calling my sponsor to tell him what happened, and we're just crying on the phone because I'm just so filled with gratitude for because I can't believe what's happening. And all the ideas I had in my head of what this was going to look like never came close. And I love that Don Major, when he talks about how he's never been able to accurately predict the future, man, that hits hard for me because I really think that I can predict the future. I know how this is gonna go, and it never goes like that. And it's always been better. Like, I will always shortchange myself. And I've come to, and I got to this place of believing through a couple of experiences, through amends, through not getting what I want, through playing God, through awakening to these realities in my life and talking with other alcoholics about it, and then and coming to wake up to the fact that there's a God in my life now that knows what's in my heart. That knows what I need, what I actually need, that I may not even know what I need. I have lots of things I think I need now, but God knows what I really need. And this was the hard part to believe, that he's going to give it to me. But was going to be on his time. Those are the two tricky parts. All right. But I got to start to have those experiences by jumping into the amends process, and not alone. I had a lot of help with that. And living in 10 and 11 has been a lot of fun. Entering the world of the spirit, as it talks about in step 10, I didn't get that. My sponsor told me that one day when I called him up, and I was all like, "Bruh, I got to do an inventory." And he's like, "We've entered the realm of the spirit out there." And I'm like, "Really? That's this? I didn't think it was going to look like this. I was at the beginning, and getting to carry a message of hope to other alcoholics. I get to sponsor three guys right now, and I get to go to the detox center once a month, and I get to carry a message of hope that you don't have to die drunk, or end up in an institution, because those were the only options for me at the end of the day. I was going to kill myself. I did a couple of institutions, but at the end of the day, I quit drinking and I want to kill myself or just drink to the bitter end. And I get to carry that message that something gets to change if I try this thing. And I've taken a couple of guys through the steps, and that has actually been transforming. I feel like it's the first time I've seen the steps, as I'm going through it with them. And I realized, like, oh my God, it's so clear through all of these steps how this is a beginning, And but like, I spent so long in my head thinking that I need to have arrived the first time I'm approached, the first time I try to approach God, But it's just the beginning. And that the spiritual life we have now is that I get to continue to return to God. I get to grow in understanding and effectiveness. That's what we're doing here. And I get to carry this message, and I get to bring God into all of my affairs, all of my relationships, every part of it. And I struggle with a lot of those parts. I don't do it perfectly, and I get burned up. And it's just a continual process of growth. So I'm really grateful for that. I don't know. I got drunk at my grandfather's funeral and got blackout drunk and cussed my father out in front of his mom and his sister and scared them. My drinking scares people. And I didn't want to do that. I didn't intend to do that. I didn't start the funeral day off with the intention of doing that. I just needed a little relief. This is a hard day. But I did that. And I didn't remember it. My mom had to tell me that when I made amends to her. She said, "You need to go talk to your grandma." I was like, "Whoa." And that was an amazing conversation. I have a relationship with my father today. Tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., I'm getting on a plane and flying to Houston to spend time with my brother and my father and my sister. We're going to spend a few days together. They want me to be there. I get to be there. I called my sister on Mother's Day because that's a thing I do now. Because I'm awake on Mother's Day. And I know what day it is. And I called her and she was crying. And she started talking to me about her drinking. And I talked to her for 2.5 hours. She's still drinking. I don't have the power. I just carry the message. It's all in God's hands. But I got to do that. My father showed up for my cousin's wedding in Richmond. He got to stay with me. Never has that man talked to me about his drinking. I'm sitting there having a cup of coffee with him one morning. And he just starts talking to me about his drinking and how he's trying to stop drinking. You know. My baby brother called me up and came out to me, told me he was gay. I was the first person he told. He was afraid to tell everyone, but he felt comfortable enough to call me and tell me. And if you would have asked me that morning, all three of those mornings, if my relationship with them was strong enough for something like that to have happened, I would have told you no. Because it didn't look the way I thought it was supposed to look. But I'm not in charge of that. Obviously. You know, I didn't do that. And that's the place I always end up. I always think that it's not strong enough, that it's not good enough, that things aren't quite right, but God's in control of all of that today. And I continually get reminded of this. I forget it all the time. But the difference today is I get to get reminded of it all of the time because I stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love this program. Even when I'm uncomfortable and exhausted and I don't want to do it, I'm going to go do it. And that saved my life. Thanks for letting me share. Yeah.